Tim Versalotti, you're the best pollster that I know in Massachusetts and probably anywhere, director of the Western New England University Poll, professor of political science, gives you some hands-on as well as some, theoretical basis to answer this question. We have a governor, because I live in Massachusetts, Charlie Baker, who is a Republican, but he is also understands that he has to take a conciliatory tone towards the Democrats, who certainly run the legislature and the rest. But he's in a tricky spot. He's got to do some endorsing now, doesn't he?
He is in a tricky spot. It's been fascinating to watch Charlie Baker's role in the presidential nominating process. Here's a guy who is extremely popular in Massachusetts, job approval ratings of 65-70% with the whole electorate. And in the primary process before New Hampshire, he endorsed New Jersey Governor Chris Christie for the Republican nomination, and that was widely viewed as repaying a favor. Christie had been head of the Republican Governors Association when Baker ran for governor and provided important support.
And then let me interrupt you and say this is all complicated by the fact that Christie is now being seriously mentioned by a lot of people as a vice presidential candidate with Trump.
That's right. That's right. Once Christie dropped out, eventually he endorsed Trump. And that put Baker in a tricky position. As the Massachusetts primary approached on March 1st, Christie, his horse, was out of the race. Would he endorse Donald Trump? Baker said no. Not only that, he wouldn't vote for Trump in the primary. He didn't indicate for whom he did vote. But it seems very clear Baker has now decided to sit out the rest of the race. According to media reports, he will not attend the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. He has not gotten involved in the selection of the Republican convention delegates from Massachusetts. Trump picked up 22 of the 42 delegates in Massachusetts, and the selection process is ongoing. So that it becomes very important to each of the remaining campaigns to make sure the delegates will be loyal to them if the nominating process at the convention goes beyond the first ballot. Candidates for these delegate positions and the state Republican committee, which is now largely populated by Baker supporters, are looking to him for guidance. Who do you want us to back? Should it go to a second ballot in Cleveland? He's staying mum. He sees no upside to getting involved at this point.
Okay, so if you're his political advisor, you're probably telling him this is the only way to go in blue state Massachusetts. You want to keep your 65% approval rating. Would you agree with that strategy? Do you think that's what he should be doing?
It depends on what his long game is. He'll be up for re-election in 2018. He's already amassed a significant amount of money, over $3 million, dwarfing anyone else who might be thinking of running has put together. And if indeed his goal is re-election, then he's playing this well up to this point. There's no upside to him getting caught up in Republican Party politics at this point. Better to stay above the fray.
But on the other hand, isn't he owed if he endorses somebody and they win?
He is, but he's not angling for a cabinet position. He's not angling for influence in Washington. Right now, his focus seems to be on the corner office. And if that's the case, he seems much more interested in consolidating his own position here in Massachusetts. Down the road, could be a different story. 2020, depending on how his reelection campaign goes and how the rest of his tenure as governor goes, he could be on a short list of expected candidates, either for the presidency or as a running mate for another nominee. And so he seems like a very patient person playing the long game here, as opposed to going for something quickly.
Is this a guy who could either be a vice presidential nominee or a presidential nominee, or is he just too liberal?
I think the chances are better for his entering the national stage as a running mate as opposed to being on the top of the ticket. His political positions on social issues are certainly more moderate than the vocal right wing of the Republican Party. He's also, while he comes across as a very genial person, he's not Mr. Charisma. To make a splash, especially to separate yourself out if it it's a large field, you need some way of catching people's attention. But if you're looking for someone who knows domestic issues well, who's very smart, who has a career in the private sector as well, then he would fit the bill as someone to fill in on a ticket should the person at the top of the ticket have more foreign policy experience or have a larger-than-life persona, shall we say.
So let's talk, if we can, about pollsters, your profession. How are they doing? They blew it in, what, Michigan? Is that where
the, they sure did, yeah.
They really blew it big time in Michigan. I'm taking it that the assumption, Tim Versalotti, always has to be, we assume who will turn out, we assume we know what the issues are, but sometimes they just get it wrong.
That's right, that's right. And in Michigan, in retrospect, looking back, the possibility was that the likely voter models were just off in terms of turnout of young people in particular, and then in the choices that African-American voters would make, particularly in Detroit. The expectation was, given Hillary Clinton's strength of black voters in the South, that she'd run very strong in Detroit as well. But Sanders made some inroads in there, and so the likely voter models were off. You're absolutely right. It's all based on assumptions. Some of it is based on history, but some of it also has to rest on current political context, and we don't always make the right guesses in that regard.
I'm getting a lot of telephone calls. They say two things. You've heard it all before, but one, I've never been polled, and so how can they do that? And also that pollsters, you know, don't get to the cell phones for the kids.
Yeah, and that first point, when people say that, I say, well, yeah, in a large pool of participants, that may not happen. But when it does, please pick up the phone and answer the question.
Right, I don't do it. They come, they call me and they say, you know, I'm so-and-so poll. And I say, well, I can't. I can't do that because I have a professional obligation not to answer those questions. It's all a bunch of hokum, you know, on my part. But also because polling has been polluted by a bunch of people who are working for the campaigns who pretend they're pollsters.
That's true. That's true. And when we poll, our interviewers are trained to stress that our surveys are funded by the university. We're not working with any candidates or parties. But there is a tremendous amount of hesitation out there among people to participate in those polls. The second point you made about cell phones, it's very important to keep this in mind. Most reputable polling organizations are dialing cell phones now. The folks that are using automated polls, interactive voice recorded polls, they're not doing cell phones, and I think that's a big mistake. But those of us who are using live interviewers, we're calling cell phones. In our latest survey, our sample was about 40% cell phone. And it's a reality that you cannot get a representative sample if you ignore people with cell phones these days.
So just for clarification, you just dial cell phones randomly, and then you find out if somebody on the other end of the phone is a this or that or this, how old they are?
What you do is you draw a sample based on area code and exchange for whatever population you're studying, and there are specific cell phone exchanges, and there are vendors who will do this for you. And then when you get someone on the line, you do a series of screening questions to make sure they actually live in the place where you're trying to study, that they're 18 or older, that they're not driving or doing something where answering questions on a cell phone might put them at risk. And then after that, you move on.
It's always great to talk to our friend, professor and director of the Western New England University poll, Tim Versalotti, one of the smartest guys I know, and always thoughtful. So we thank you so much, Tim, and when we come back the next time, let's talk about, maybe we'll start with Joe Biden, okay?